Good morning, comrades. You are listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This is your weekly Good Morning Comrade with Jeff and Robert on the show. Robert, what's popping, my dude?
What is popping? Let's see, big showing by it's Wednesday, it's not Saturday, because we're pre-recording. So big showing by Undecided in Michigan last night with over 100,000 votes. I've been thinking about this all day. I haven't been this excited, and I'm trying to be. I'm not giddy, but I'm like actually, I don't know, hopeful about like an election actually meaning something since Bernie won since he won Nevada. I haven't been this like. I didn't watch the primary results last night because I was legit kind of sick about them. I was just like, my phone alarm is going off. I thought my cat stepped on.
Take your pills.
Sorry, but because if it would have come in low, you know, everybody would have been like, well, you know, I guess they don't care about genocide as much as they say they do. Like, whatever.
Oh, don't worry. The Democrats are still trying to do that.
I know, but they can't. The numbers, they can't. And this vote, I mean, not to, like, again, I'm trying not to get too excited about it. So, like, listen to what I, like, the people who voted undecided, like, and the people who are going to vote this way in the future when, as the primaries move on, this is one of the most important votes I think they could you could make at all. So much respect and love to them, because this vote could literally, if you voted undecided, you literally had a chance, like your vote could save lives, like thousands of lives. It really could. And you don't, in American politics, we don't have a chance like that. Normally we don't have, the stakes are like for real. We're not, this isn't education. This isn't, you know, socialized medicine, which are all things that we're like are cool and you know, we want, but like this vote could literally save lives because I'm not putting all eggs in this basket, but it's one more tool. And it could literally turn the Biden White House against Israel. Finally, yeah, it has the potential. That's what I'm saying.
So just for people who might not be aware, the primary for Michigan, the presidential primary for Michigan was this past Tuesday as of recording, which is the 27th, which was the 27th and of February. And Michigan is one of these states where you can essentially, like, in the presidential primary, nobody serious other than like nobody serious was running against Joe Biden in the state of Michigan at all. Like, nobody. Like, it, like, I think Marianne Williamson was still on the ballot after she dropped out. And then, like, that loser Dean Phillips is just like running for president.
Because, he's like, so he's awful.
He's almost like a never Trump Republican, except he's a Democrat. Like, he's like a never Biden Democrat or something like that.
Yeah, but he's you're right, because he has functionally all the same positions as Genocide Joe.
Yeah. But like, he doesn't even oppose anything that he's doing other than the fact that, like, oh, Joe Biden, like, well, we have to, I don't know what it is. I have no idea.
I've seen him talk twice. And the first time he spoke made me so angry that I ended up calling his office. And I'm like, I'm not a constituent, but no, like, I'm not voting for you in any primary. There ain't no way.
So, but in Michigan, 100,000 people in Michigan voted uncommitted. This is like something that was organized by a group called Listen to Michigan. If you go on Twitter, Listen to Michigan, and the idea behind it was Michigan was a key, like, critical state in Joe Biden's 2020 victory. I mean, it's like one of those battleground states because we have a stupid, messed up, like, presidential electoral system, like states vote, not people. And so, like, what ends up always happening, people know this, you watch any cable news, especially, people talk about swing states, right? Mm-hmm. And Michigan is one of the key swing states that Joe Biden held on to. It's got a heavy population of union members, like old time union members, and then also an extremely heavy population of especially around Dearborn of Arabs and Muslims, who are, I mean, obviously not very happy with how Joe Biden has been handling the basically how the policy in Israel, where, you know, Joe Biden might, you know, call, you know, Netanyahu an a-hole or something like that, or like say, oh, we really want to make sure that Israel's not breaking any laws while they're bombing civilians and bombing the Rafah Pass and all this other stuff. But like at the same time, you know, cutting Israel, you know, at the same time that 30,000 Palestinian civilians have been murdered by Israeli military, cutting $12 billion checks to the Israeli government to continue doing just that, you know, pretending to wag the finger but never saying ceasefire, all this stuff. And it's just like basically, you know, basically supporting the genocidal policy of Israel. And so I'm actually, I have an article from Reuters up. Michigan's 100,000 uncommitted votes challenge Biden's Israel stance. I'm surprised to see this in Reuters. Dateline Dearborn, Michigan. President Joe Biden's reelection campaign faces an arduous task uniting his party after Michigan Democrats waged a massive protest vote over his support of Israel's military campaign against Hamas in Gaza. With 95% of votes counted, Biden won Tuesday's primary with 80%, but 13%, or more than 100,000 people, cast uncommitted ballots in a state where a large Arab American community and other progressive Democrats vented their anger at Biden's support of an Israeli offensive in which tens of thousands of Palestinians have been killed. Neither Biden nor Vice President Kamala Harris mentioned Gaza or Israel. Of course they didn't. In their statements on Michigan results, an admission that drew criticism from organizers and uncommitted vote effort. Just to kind of like zoom out, in this key state, which could essentially like be the difference between
will 100%.
The key in
he Joe can't Biden win without Michigan. He can't
or losing. Yeah, he can't win without Michigan. Like, 100,000 people in that state didn't just like decided, hey, we're gonna sit our butts home. Mm-hmm. They decided we're gonna get out there and we're gonna say, not you, Joe Biden. And that's huge from the perspective of like you have to respond to that. You have to respond to that if you want to win, which, I mean, if you don't respond to that, then it's very clear that you don't, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, just for a point of reference, too. So 100,000 people voted uncommitted last night. Hillary Clinton lost to Donald Trump in the general by a little bit over less than 11,000 votes. And 10 times that amount voted uncommitted. Yeah. Again, like, this isn't like, it could be possibly like you cannot win the White House with these thin, narrow margins without Michigan now. Michigan is the new Ohio. And this is there. I have so many things to say. Like, one, this is what happens when I'm not talking about the Greens or, you know, DSA or anybody. I'm talking about the two major parties, Democrat and Republican parties, who have unlimited donors, unlimited amounts of money. They can get around the campaign finance laws. They don't care. It's just a big slush fund and everybody gets a taste. When you don't run a 50-state strategy and you want to do this Bill Clinton third-way triangulation garbage to where you're going to slice off a little here and try to steal a couple votes, you're trying to be too cute by half, this is how you get set up to get beat. The second thing is that I don't understand when I watch these talking heads like last night where they're trying to say, well, you know, 100,000 people came out, you know, but those weren't Trump voters. Obviously they came out to vote for, you know, to send a message to Joe Biden, but it's not going to like, they're going to vote for Trump. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. But why I keep hearing this and I'm like, why do y'all keep acting like the United States has compulsory voting? Like, the third option is just stay home. And that's what these people are telling you they're going to do. And then the retort to that will be like, oh, well, you know, not voting for Biden is a vote for Trump, which I used to say stuff like that because of the math or whatever, like not Joe Biden, but I definitely said that about Barack Obama. But in this, now that we've already had a vote for Trump saying that is not scaring any person of color, any queer person, women. It shouldn't scare any marginalized person, because you've already survived that 4 years. And I'm like, you know how to survive. People of color especially have survived in the past and will keep on surviving, you know. And so the idea that because Trump has already been president, and I'm not saying it's going to be the same as Joe Biden. I'm definitely not saying that. I'm not even saying that as people say, oh, it's going to be so, so bad. I'm not even saying they're wrong and it's not going to be as bad as they're saying it is. What I'm saying is that those words are blunted when you've already had 4 years of that man and you came out the other side. So you can't, you know how you watch a horror movie? Like some of my favorite movie is Alien, right? You only see the alien like 3 times in that movie, 3 or 4 or 5 times. I don't know. But in a good horror movie, you don't get a good look at the monster. And the more you show the monster, the less scary he is. The opposite, the idea of what I'm saying is like Nightmare on Elm Street. Freddy's just walking around all the time. You know exactly what he looks like. And he became a joke in that series. And the writers leaned into it as the series went on. The same thing with Donald Trump. I'm not saying he's not scary. I'm saying is United States populace has already got a good look at him. And he's not as scary as what the vote scolders are trying to make up trying to put into your mind, if that makes sense. And I honest to God, I haven't heard anybody say that. And I'm just like, why? Why are you acting like this man hasn't already been president? Like, yeah, we were like, you, when Donald Trump comes in, you're not going to believe what's going to happen. I'm like, what do you mean? I didn't just get dropped here, dude. I've been here on Earth.
And the other thing too, and like, this is part of like why, and like, you know, I've been in parts of like discussions with work and whatever of like the question keeps coming up. Why isn't like Joe Biden's message like connecting with people? And the answer, the very clear answer is he's not offering anything at all.
Yes.
Like basically the answer is like literally nothing will fundamentally change. And then two, like the only thing that they're claiming that they are going to offer is like refuge from like oblivion, essentially. Like, and it's very clear what is happening is that the Democrats have decided their strategy in this election is to only leverage the potential fear that you're mentioning and have that be the only thing that you, so it's like a really exploitative tactic to try and get like votes, to try and get like support, and it's not working. People aren't responding to that. It's so insane. I'm scared, like, for the reasons you mentioned. And then also at the same time, when we talked about this last week, like they're not even offering an alternative on things like immigration. When they were like screaming bloody murder, the Democrats were in 2016, that like Joe Biden is going to, I mean, he did do the Muslim ban.
Kids in cages.
Well, Joe Biden and the Democrats literally just tried to push for the Republican position on immigration. And the Republicans are like, get out of here.
Yeah, that's our keys that we dangle in front of the electorate every 4 years. Yeah, and it's actually, you know, if anything, it's got us in trouble if we're going to be serious.
You think you're going to outplay us at our game? Yeah, right. We're going to go even double hard. It's ridiculous.
Well, if anything, you would think, at this point, you would think in the back rooms where everybody's, you know, smoking cigars and eating caviar, you've got, you know, Republican lawmakers talking to Democratic lawmakers being like, hey, dog, don't go down the path we're going down, because you're going to be the dog that caught the car, and then it's going to turn on you. Like, don't, you know, because I'm thinking about it. This is like a perfect, going back to what I'm saying, it's like a perfect time in history to where, you know, these people are trying to scare me with the Republicans are going to do this, the Republicans are going to do that. And I'm like, they're doing it now and you're in power. And they're doing it so hard that they're like, oh man, IVF ban in Alabama is crazy. We're gonna get like lynched in the streets if we keep pushing this. We gotta stop. You gotta bring it back, boys. Yeah, you don't show them your power level first day. Come on. So it's like you're already in power, and Roe versus Wade is gone. Roe is gone under a Democratic president. What are we talking about? So I know I've said it a million times, but like, what's Trump gonna do? Is he gonna resurrect the Palestinians that are dead and then kill them again? I mean, I guess that would be worse. So I'm like, at some point, you have to draw a line and say, I cannot support this anymore.
Yeah, I genuinely do think it will be worse if like the Republicans and
Trump. I do too.
Discussed last time, but like again, we had Suleiman on the show a couple of weeks ago. You want me to go up to him, whose mom has been like captured by Israeli government, who's been beaten, she's been held captive with like no reason. I didn't even give a reason for why she's actually Suleiman. I want you to vote for Joe Biden. Like, you want me to tell him that?
The guy who's like the guy who's giving aid, comfort, and material support to your mother's torturer.
Yeah,
I'm
not doing that one. Sorry.
It's crazy.
Like, how can I do that? I can't do that. Like, I just don't got that in me. I don't got that dog in me, I guess.
You know, and I had a discussion with a guy at work who's a right winger, but he's got a good heart. And he usually comes at me with talking points, and he was talking about something came up, and he's like, yeah, but you know, Democrats only do this because it's pandering. And I'm like, but isn't that what you're supposed to do, dog? Like, if you get elected and I voted for you, aren't you supposed to like do what I want you to do? Or is it better that we just let lobbyists decide what the policy is?
You're like, saying that Republicans and Donald Trump don't pander?
I know. I know. Well, they pander, but they don't do anything because even they realize the thing that they say they want to do will actually end up hurting them in the end. Like,
they're flicking the big light. They're the kid that's like surrounded by the oily rag, just like flicking the big lighter, but not.
Yes. Like, yes. No. That's a really good analogy. You know, it's just like when you hear a Republican. You know, they talk about, you know, I'm pro-life and this and that. Like, no, you're not, dog. Like, you don't want to get rid of, there are a couple sickos, you know, who got elected. And even those people are getting reined in. Like, nobody's stepping in front of the train, the train that's about to hit Boebert. No one's stepping in front of the train that's about to run over Marjorie Taylor Greene, because these are rogue elements. These are creatures that have come out of the ooze. Out of the waste, the swamp, the toxic ooze that the Republicans have laid down, but they don't want those monsters either because they're not controllable.
They're the Frankenstein's monster,
right? And so, you know, when you hear a Mitch McConnell, I'm thinking of Mitch McConnell because he says he's retiring after this year. When you hear like an old school, Republican talking about, oh yeah, we don't like the abortion. We got to make sure you can't even do, you know, in vitro fertilization. They don't mean that. They don't even want that because they know that's not popular and it will hurt them. When you hear them talking about, I want to get all the illegals out of here. As a leftist, I say, well, I can't stop you, you know, unless we're going to, do some kind of crazy action. But I guarantee, and you know it too, if you do that, it's going to destroy the United States and destroy our economy. So good luck with that. So they know that. They know that. And that's why they'll never, if they get wins, it's by accident. And they didn't really, just like Roe versus Wade. They don't
want to do that. Or it's either by accident, or it's because the Democrats just don't provide any resistance to it, and they establish a lot of these right-wing positions that the Republicans dictate over and over again.
Yeah, we're saying the same thing. It's what you're saying with the kid with the oily rags. It's the same thing with Benjamin Netanyahu's of why they materially back Hamas, is because he says, I can control how high the flames go. Well, at the end of the day, you cannot. That's a great analogy, because the flames are the thing you cannot control. They are going to go where the wind takes them. And that's what you're seeing. That's what you're seeing in Israel. That's what you're seeing in America right now in the right wing. The flames are just going to go. And now you have no choice. Now you're just swept along with them.
Yeah. There is a whole lot of very angry liberals about this as well.
Let them be angry. Done with them.
I want to go through a couple of them, which are super fun. Here's like one of these, you know, DNC like Gen Z like representatives, this loser called Dash Dobrovsky. Who says, if you voted uncommitted in Michigan instead of voting for Biden, you're a Trump-supporting terrorist. Like, literally just deciding to do the racism because, like you remember when Democrats, like, don't you love it when Democrats are like, oh, we stand for people who are, like, oppressed and, like, we don't woke scold you left, right, center all day long. But, like, when those same people, when people of color or when people who are in those minority groups that they claim to represent, you know, when they don't do exactly what they're expected to do, you know, by the Democrats' decision, they're just a terrorist now.
They start doing
literal, straight up racism.
Well, that's because when you scratch a liberal, a fascist bleeds. Like I used to think that was just a meme, but I'm in full, like, you know, and I hate to say it, but I mean, look at our boy Bernie Sanders. The same way, it's like, still at this late hour, he can't say the word ceasefire, and it's like, yeah. it just establishes what I've always been told by, like, people who, you know, drink an Urban Mate with a beret on and a Che Guevara shirt. They're like, I always laughed at them, and I always thought it was, I'd be like, y'all are LARPers, y'all know what you're talking about. But historically, when the chips are down and a liberal has to choose between fascism or not fascism, they choose fascism every single time.
So just to move on, there are some really fun deluded Democrats in this whole deal as well. They're all huffing on that copium. A Pennsylvania political strategist. Her name is Lindy Lee. Media, if you're not going to report about the uncommitted vote in Michigan, report that 16% uncommitted is historically normal.
No, it's not.
It's 100,000 people is not historically normal. Straight up.
It's absolutely not.
Report that Trump underperformed again. Dude, every single person that went and voted for Republicans, that went and voted for what's-her-face, the South Carolina governor,
Nikki Haley.
Every single one of them is going to vote for Trump.
Every single one.
There's 100,000 people that went and voted uncommitted. There's a really good chance that they're not going to vote at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
If the policy don't change. Report that attempts to stop Biden failed. Report that Biden continues to overperform. Stop carrying water for MAGA.
Overperform against who?
Look, if anybody wants to, if you want somebody that's going to trash and dog the media, look no further than me. I'm happy to do that any single time that you want. Wow, but when you're saying that they're not doing their job or they're carrying water for Trump for noticing that 100,000 people in the state of Michigan got up off their butts people who are like regular people don't go and vote in like presidential primaries. That's what like the freaks do, right? Not normal people do that. And like, these are like people who are committed to like actually doing things through voting. And they're like, not you, Joe Biden. And there's a chance that those people, if the policy doesn't change, won't show up in November. And there's a lot more that usually would show up for a presidential election that might do the same. And that's that's scary, honestly. If you actually care if Joe Biden is going to win this election, if you want him to win, that doesn't put like the fear of God in you. I don't know what to tell you, man. I have no idea what to tell you.
I'm going to write an op-ed for the New York Times, and it's just going to be titled, "Please Stop Telling Me the Emperor Has No Clothes." When it's very apparent that the emperor has no clothes. I mean, I have just as much credibility. I have more credibility than that IDF intelligence agent that they hired who'd never written a journalistic article in her life. I've written college papers, and I have a political podcast. I'm more qualified than her. Why can't I get a job at the New York Times? Or do we all have to be IDF intelligence? Is that how it works? So gross, dude.
Pod Save America's Dan Pfeiffer is here to talk about how complicated things actually are.
Heck yeah.
complicated. Most of the analysis of Michigan primary results are either Biden is screwed or see, Biden is fine. I know this is shocking, but it's actually more complicated than either of these hot takes. No. Biden, if things continue the way that they are, Biden's screwed.
Screwed.
It's like a whole thread. Let's go. I hope the Biden administration changes its approach to Gaza for reasons that go beyond one primary or politics. This is moral imperative to use every lever available to protect lives. Here's my take on Michigan results because I think people are misreading them. One, results in Michigan show that there is more support and enthusiasm for Biden in the Democratic base than is portrayed in the media. There is also less antipathy towards the president than the coverage suggests. Get out of here, bro.
Yeah, no, now see, I could organize him. There is a way to spin that, which would be, I believe, factually correct. You say, not there isn't support for Biden. There's support for the Democratic Party. And therefore, you're saying that, hey, you need to like do the damn thing. You need to stop this war immediately, or we cannot support you, but we do support the party, or we would have just stayed home. There's a way to say that. And then how many people were actually uncommitted who just didn't even vote? Like they didn't, so the 100,000 plus the people in this low turnout primary who didn't even want to vote, didn't even want to waste time with either option. Those people are definitely staying home. And I guarantee you it's at least 10,000, which is the amount that Hillary Clinton lost by. I guarantee, without just pulling that out of my butt, I guarantee you it's at least that. So let's say 10,000 people, because this is already a low turnout election. So if we're going to grant me 10,000 people are going to stay home. And then let's say that 2% of non-committed, another 20,000 hold to their principles and do not vote for Joe Biden. That's 30,000 people right there, bro. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Let's say
there is nobody. Let's say everybody in Michigan voted, right? Let's say everybody in Michigan who was going to vote voted. Nobody stayed home. It was 100% turnout. Fantastic. Now, let's say 1.5% of the uncommitted vote decide not to vote for Biden. That's like 15,000 people. 1.5%. You're going to lose. You're going to lose. Either way, there's no, you cannot win without Michigan.
You need Michigan.
Ann Arbor is the new Cincinnati. Like, you cannot.
Right. Yeah.
Really, the new Cleveland. I'm sorry, Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati's always blue, but Cleveland goes back and forth.
Anyway, of all the historical perils imperfect, but getting 100,000 votes for uncommitted is very impressive. It's only a few points better than the 11% uncommitted votes registered against Obama in 2012. It's whatever. There was no organized effort, whatever.
No organized effort.
Talking percentage points as opposed to actual raw numbers. 100,000, like 11% in 2012, I think it was like 20,000 people. This is five times that. Three, there's clear there's a backlash against Biden's approach to Gaza and Michigan's crucial Arab American populace. Uncommitted beat Biden in Hamtramck, Michigan, the nation's only majority Muslim city, by nearly 30 points. That is insane. The fact that Joe Biden in like Dearborn, Michigan, lost to nobody.
Nobody,
lost
dog.
To nobody.
That's crazy. That's crazy. I'm trying to see how many. Let's see. I'm trying to do. Keep going. I'm trying to do a quick search of how many Arabs actually live in Michigan. How many?
Biden only won Michigan by 150,000 votes in 2020. There's no path to 270 without Michigan. So it would be a mistake to dismiss these results. I think you're right about that. There's work to do to rebuild Biden coalition in this state. Something that Biden camp obviously knows. Do they know it? Do they care? I mean, I imagine not. Like, the only thing that could change this is, like, actually changing policy towards Israel. And that, Joe Biden ain't going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Prove me wrong, I guess. But
so,
like,
there's 2%. I'm looking, there's 2%. Like, Michigan is 2% Arabs. And so, we're saying around 200,000. So, obviously, if 1 in 6 people...
And it's not just Arabs.
Joe Biden got 600,000. Yeah, 1 in 6 people are voted non-committal in that election last night. That's definitely not, like you said, that's not all. That's not even close to like all Arabs.
Yeah.
So you're in trouble, dog. Like, how you can't spin this.
Yeah, they're trying. there's less opposition to Biden than the media suggests, but there's enough to worry about in a close election. There's no margin for error in 2024, and we must take every vote seriously. I think that he's underestimating the opposition towards Biden generally, but like, again, this is like an F around and find out type situation, and they're effing around real hard.
Yep. And it's like
WHIVLP New Orleans 102.3. This is Good Morning Comrade.
And yeah. I keep saying, oh, they're worried. And I'm like, well, I'm not seeing it, bro. Like, because they keep doing the same thing. Well, I mean, I guess you got to read between the lines, you know, like I think Joe Biden going off script at a ice cream parlor talking about, oh, we're working on a ceasefire. We're real close. I think that's worry, you know?
Yeah. Obviously. Or at least like,
cause you don't say that. Like, yeah, yeah, you don't say that before the election.
No. I mean, it was 2 days before Michigan, so maybe he thought that it had to get, but like nobody buying that. You know,
nobody
I mean,
buying that.
You see him take steps in that direction. Beyond that, I mean, like anything else that you wanted to shout on this issue, or I mean, like last word on it for
no, you I think I think I got my whole rant out.
Yeah, like it's a really weird situation, and like Democrats are not doing a great job if they want to win this election.
Yeah, they're so awful, and this is going to be the first presidential election that I was able to vote in, you know, and I've voted absentee overseas before. Like, this is the first one I'm going to sit out, and I'm not going to do it. Like, I know it doesn't mean much here in New Orleans, Louisiana, but I can tell you right now, if I lived back up north in Cincinnati, I would do the same thing. No doubt about it. I have no doubt in my mind.
So just to kind of move forward, there was a really huge development when it came to Starbucks workers. I don't know if you saw this.
I did, because I sent it to you at work today.
Yeah, that's right. You did. I saw it first. You sent it to me. I'm like, hey, Robert saw this. But on Tuesday, the 27th, the same day as the primary, actually, in Michigan. There was a huge, massive, titanic, gargantuan development from the Starbucks campaign. And I'll just go ahead and read the post. This is on their Twitter. A giant step towards a forward made possible by thousands and thousands of us joining together and speaking out. This is huge. Workers United and Starbucks share a commitment to developing a productive relationship in the best interest of Starbucks partners. During mediation discussions last week, over ongoing brand and IP litigation, a constructive path forward emerged on the broader issues of the future of organizing and collective bargaining at Starbucks. Now, let me just stop right there and say that, like, the Starbucks Workers United campaign, which we've been covering on the show for at least 2 years, probably longer, they've been organizing store by store Starbucks and essentially attempting to get one huge collective bargaining contract with Starbucks for all workers. And every step of that way, Starbucks, the company, has fired, has bullied, has intimidated, and basically like broken every single rule that you can think of when it comes to labor law. They've closed stores. They've been forced to reopen stores. Like, there's been a lot going on there. And after, you know, years of like hundreds of stores organizing and winning their unions, they had not gotten a contract yet. They had not gotten collective bargaining. And this is the first step towards it. So let me just continue reading. To build on that path, Workers United and Starbucks have agreed to begin discussions on a foundational framework to achieve collective bargaining agreements for represented stores and partners, the resolution of litigation between the union and the company, including brand litigation, and fair process for workers to organize. As a sign of good faith, Starbucks has agreed to provide workers represented by Starbucks Workers United with a credit card tipping and benefits announced by the company in May of 2022. So on this point, and this is like one of the things that was like really messed up. If you organize, like, so like you go to Starbucks and like you buy coffee with a credit card, you're like, you know, you can like everywhere, you can tip on that credit card, right?
Right.
But like Starbucks consciously made the decision to exclude union stores from credit card checks.
I didn't know that.
Totally. Like, this is real.
I know
and
you
like, finally, after, you know, a year, 2 years, just about.
So just wage theft. Nice.
Like, you could say it that way. I'm not a lawyer.
I know, but it's like, not. It wouldn't qualify.
I mean, it is. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. Jesus. But, like, they would basically make a differentiation between union stores and, like, non-union stores. And basically say, well, we can't. They would actually do it like, we can't. We didn't negotiate this with the union, which they ain't negotiating anything with.
Anything.
So it's, like, ridiculous. Last paragraph here. While there's plenty of work ahead, coming together to develop this framework is a significant step forward and a clear demonstration of a shared commitment to working collaboratively and with mutual respect. So that is what is from the article. What say you, Robert?
I think that's honestly, it's surprising to me in the best way possible. I usually don't send you labor stuff, but like it caught me so off guard that I was like, whoa. It surprised me, and that I want to think that this is a combination of they're being hit hard by union organizing here at home, and then also the worldwide boycott of Starbucks is really hurting them.
Because of their Zionist like support.
Yeah, I just can't believe that a multi-billion dollar international company like is capitulating like this. And I'm like, I'm here for it, but it's like watching the Death Star blow up. Like if you're a rebel, you're in the Rebel Alliance, like you can't really believe it. Even though that's the outcome you fought for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's actually a really great article in The American Prospect. We can just start just kind of like taking a look at that. Credit to them. Harold Meyerson is the author of this piece. The headline is Starbucks Stops Opposing Its Baristas Union. In a historic breakthrough, Starbucks and its workers announce they've come together. This is Dateline the 27th. Quote, "This is what we've always wanted," said Michelle Eisen, a Starbucks barista who's been with the company since 2010 and works at the Buffalo outlet that was the first to vote to go union.
Crazy,
back,
dude.
In 2021. We wanted Starbucks to actually be the company that they always said they were. On Tuesday, Starbucks may have finally become just that. In a joint announcement released by both Starbucks and Workers United, the Baristas Union, that is part of SEIU, Big Perp, the company agreed to, quote, "to begin discussions on a foundational framework designed to achieve collective bargaining agreements for represented stores and partners." They're moving in the right direction now. They're going to still like drag their feet every step of this way, I'm sure. But I wanted to like, it is important that they're at least like saying that, oh, we have to go through like these processes and we have to respect our workers or whatever. That's like, that is a huge step forward.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you that I was thinking about today. I wanted to ask you, and it just popped back in my head. Do you think that because of the failure of electoralism is why more people, and especially younger people, are gravitating towards putting their necks out there to organize a labor union? Because the paths that we've always kind of been brought up to believe just vote harder, people have just realized are closed? Or is there another reason?
I mean, I think it's because, like, that might be a part of it. But I think more than that, the sort of, like, way I would think it is that, like people are poorer, like, mm-hmm. relative to inflation and everything like that than they've been in quite a long time. Like, millennials and then Gen Z have both been generations that have essentially, like, been worse off socioeconomically than previous generations. As that sort of like progresses, and that is connected to the electoral politics that are you know, part of the reason that this whole thing is failing, but like the manifestation of it is that people are in a more dire position, and when they're in more dire positions, they're willing to take more risks and take more chances, because what do you got to lose?
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense, because it's like What are you going to do? Fire me? Like, PJ's is firing up the street. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And there's more of an investment on the labor side, on the union side. There's more of an investment in organizing because mm-hmm. there is opportunity for it. Part of the malaise of, you know, previous generations that have put us in the position that we're in is there was a generation of fear around, like, union busts. I mean, we talk on this show about the air traffic controller strike that was busted up by Reagan. That was in 1980, I think it was. You know, correct me if I'm wrong.
It feels a little later. It feels like I definitely remember it being on TV. It might have been like 87, 88 maybe. Something like that. But I definitely remember watching it on TV because I was a little freak who watched the news.
But anyway, 81. It was 81.
Really?
Yeah, 81.
Man, I just...
Anyway, like, there was a... That put a... I mean, it put the brakes on a lot of organizing from established labor in this country for at least a generation.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been declining... There's actually still declining union membership numbers ever since. And we're finally, I think, in the early stages, we're not quite there yet, in the early stages, though, of turning that whole thing around because of, you know, we're figuring out on the worker side how to organize in this more service-based economy. You know, part of it has also been the deindustrialization of the sort of like Iron Belt, now the Rust Belt of the sort of like Midwest. That was a fortress of unionized workers. A lot of that stuff's been shipped overseas. What can be shipped overseas has been shipped overseas. And by the way, people overseas is every union too. But the transition of that economy from a production-based economy to a more service-based economy is you essentially have to relearn how to organize in that space.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
And that's finally manifesting as well. So, like, sorry if it found like you asked me what time it is and I told you how to make a watch, but, like...
No, I get that.
There's a lot of factors in that question. Like, it's a really deep question that you asked. And there's, I hate to sound like Dan Pfeiffer on this one, but it's complicated.
Yeah. It just, like, if you would have told me, you know, 10 years ago that baristas at, like, the richest, you know, coffee company in the world were going to have a contract in the service industry before, like, other trades, you know, other jobs that we kind of associate more with labor organizing, I'd have been like, that's crazy. That's a crazy world. But so, yeah, like, here we are. So that's why it's kind of boggling my old mind.
Yeah. And plus it's like, again, the economy from like what we traditionally think of like as unionized labor, the United States does not have as many of those jobs as
they
have. I mean, like, part of why the UAW strike from this year was such a huge deal was because, specifically the big three automakers of Stellantis, GM, General Motors, rather, and Ford, like, they pride themselves on building their cars in America for the most part, and that's, like, part of their selling point.
Yeah.
So to a certain extent, they can't outsource all of it to other places. And so, UAW and auto workers kind of have them by the short and curlies to a certain extent, where they can't go. And plus, that provided, and you are seeing a rise in auto workers unionizing. There was an announcement just this week. Shout out to UAW again. There is a Mercedes plant.
Alabama.
They just filed for I think it was their intent to organize a union. So, like, there is a lot happening in there is a lot happening in what we would think of as traditionally organized labor as well. But right now, I think, because and honestly, part of why I'm interested in specifically Starbucks is because, one, it's such a huge company, but two, there are a lot of young people that are a part of the Starbucks organizing and Starbucks Workers United, all of this, that are the future of the labor movement. That is like they're essentially about to get a huge and hard fought. They're not getting an easy win. They're about to get an extremely hard fought win, and they're going to take that experience and push it towards the next generation. And everybody's going to see it happen. It's actually it's very exciting.
I am
about electoral politics. Mm-hmm. I am the complete opposite about the union politics when it comes to things like Starbucks Workers United. I'm very excited about what's going on there.
I would even go further than that and say that, because I was rolling that over my head while you were saying it about the next generation of organizers, but I would even say it's not even the next generation. It's going to be this generation, because working at Starbucks, like, okay, let's be honest. Let's be real. Like, and that's not because like working at Starbucks is not valid. Like, people need coffee. Like, it's a, yeah, it's an amazing job. Yeah. It's needed, right? It's benefit. It's essential to the economy, but let's be honest. People who work at Starbucks most likely aren't going to work there forever. So when they do move on, they're going to take that. Not even just, even if they're not labor organizers, they're going to take that attitude. If they're just benefited from the union, they're going to be like, wait a minute. I'm not putting up with this at this job. They didn't treat me like this when I was pushing coffee. Like, this is crazy. So it's almost like me when I rant about like, oh, the Marine Corps taught me about socialism, because I was like, wait a minute. When I was in the Marine Corps, we had X, Y, and Z. Tell me why in the normie world that's supposed to be making all this money, I can't have the same benefits. It's crazy. We got to do better. And I think it's going to be a force multiplier on people who work there and move on.
Yeah. There are possibilities that are abound right now. And I mean, like, and just to sort of like to dampen it a little bit, like, you know, capital knows that this is all happening. The people with money, the people who run corporations, the people who like already run everything, they see what's going on and they're already looking at their next steps. Like, even if they fold on Starbucks, they're going to be looking at the next thing and look at how to stop that. And we need to be ready for it.
Absolutely.
They ain't going to change. The class war never ends.
No, absolutely. If there's profit to be made, they want all of it. So
they want to edge their own workers out. They want maximum production. It's literally a number of like lowest input, biggest output. Like, it's like you want to put the smallest number into the magical money machine as you possibly can and get the biggest number out of the magical money machine that you could possibly get in.
Absolutely. No, and that's why you need a union, because you need somebody to fight to make sure that you get your fair share.
Yeah, so let's just get back to the article really quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
After decades of decline, the American – and this speaks to a little bit about what we've been saying. After decades of decline, the American union movement has seen a dramatic uptick in the past couple of years with a wave of unionizations among difficult-to-replace professional workers, university teaching assistants, hospital interns, not just interns, but like nurses. Nurses are popping off right now. We just had in New Orleans, UMC? Won their union election and they're bargaining for a contract now. Residents, a landmark contract for unionized auto workers, which we just saw this past year, and a ruling from Biden's National Labor Relations Board that enabled workers to win back some of their organizing rights. But organizing and winning contracts for the kind of workers who can be replaced, who managers have routinely fired when they seek to join or form unions, has still presented a nearly insuperable obstacle. Insuperable? Thanks, Harold.
Superb Al?
Insuperable. That's a new one on me. And as a result, that's one of those like dictionary words. As a result, union density hasn't really budged among these victories. If anything, it's gone down slightly. It's going like slightly up, I believe, in the public sector, but like slightly down in the private sector. But it's having slower declines than it's had in a while now. This is why Tuesday's announcement is the single most important breakthrough American workers have achieved in a very long time. And so Harold Meyerson, the author of this article, is not sparing. Like, he's not being like, he's not downplaying this. Until Tuesday, workers in industries such as fast food or other parts of the service sector appeared to be all but unorganizable. So fierce and successful and routine was management's opposition to such initiatives. It certainly was fierce at Starbucks, so long as the company founder Howard Schultz called the shots. During the more than 2 years since the Buffalo baristas voted to go union, the company has faithfully followed the Union Busters playbook, firing workers who had led organizing campaigns, refusing to bargain with workers who had voted to go union, which is now 10,000 workers, and withholding raises from them. So basically, you got a union here, you're not getting raises.
Gross.
Despite that, the workers persisted. In recent weeks, baristas at 21 outlets, we talked about this last week, 21 outlets all filed for unionization on the same day. And a slate of three pro-worker notables, including Wilbur Liebman, who chaired the NLRB during the Obama administration, have been running for Starbucks board director seats. Ha-ha. There you see the revolving door, right? Mm-hmm. At the company's annual shareholders meeting to be held 2 weeks from tomorrow. In recent weeks, the company now led by a post-Schultz CEO, Laxman Narasimhan. Sorry, Black. Actually, I'm not sorry. You're a CEO. Released a statement suggesting that it was willing to alter its course, although no tangible course alterations were apparent until Tuesday. So, this is sort of like getting into the nuts and bolts of it. Does this change Starbucks at Starbucks? Is this like imminent, or is it like indicative of a change at large? Do you think it is? I mean, do you feel like that there is a major swing in terms of labor momentum, union momentum? I think we might have talked about that a little bit already, but like what are you feeling? Is that momentum?
No, yes, but again, I'm cautiously optimistic because of what you said. Like, it's a tactical retreat to try to reorganize. So yeah, you just have to. I mean, people smarter than me, like more people like you, obviously know what the boss's next steps are going to be, and you have to be ready to counter that. These are victories that people have already won in the past. Don't try to act like this is a new thing, but you personally, Jeff, don't need me to tell you that. You already know.
Yeah. And then also it was either this past week or the week prior, UAW announced that they were investing $40 million in new organizing. So that means that they have decided they see opportunity to spend money. The union is spending money to organize more places. They're going to hire more organizers. They're going to buy more infrastructure and you know, set up offices, halls, or whatever it is, so that, you know, when, because the auto industry is changing right now, and Sean Fain and the UAW know what's going on. We're moving towards EVs. We need to make sure that workers who are at battery plants, and this is literally what he was saying, like during the strike, like we need to make sure that when these automakers open up a battery plant for their new electric vehicle batteries or whatever part of this new part of the auto economy pops up, that those are union jobs, that they're not going to use that as a way to we're going to fire a bunch of people at the gas, you know, the gas tank building part or whatever, you know, whoever does the combustion part of the engine, and then just hire people on, totally new workers. We're going to make sure that there's a transition from those old jobs to those new jobs, and that you actually support those workers when they make that transition, and that they're still good paying jobs that have the same benefits, and people aren't getting screwed over because the auto industry changes. That ain't workers' fault.
No, absolutely. Excuse me. If you just stay ready so you don't have to get ready, I guess. But I'm just super scared, but also excited about you know, like you said, like what's Starbucks going to do next? Because they're gonna try something goofy. They're gonna bring in, you know, some weird union busters and, you know, try to put a wedge between labor and what's theirs. And people like you are here to make sure that doesn't happen.
All of us, man. Like it's not just if it's just the people that like work at the union.
Mm-hmm.
Totally screwed. There need to be workers. There needs to be public support. There needs to be everybody. And honestly, again, like we need to. I'm gonna say it, and I'm not trying to say. I'm not putting the
say it. Be really real, bro.
But like part of that is going to be electing politicians that are union friendly. Yeah. And like I'm thinking like Rashida. I'm thinking like AOC. People like that, who have shown that they're interested in. You know, for whatever other limit, not so much Rashida, but like some of the you know progressive elected or whatever have shown that there's a lot of holes in their game on that. Rashida Tlaib specifically is from Detroit,
absolutely,
and like she just sort of like hits this like sweet spot of like union slash like I mean she's Palestinian, so like she's kind of like always on the right side of stuff right now. So that's to her.
Yepers.
Anyway, as we're winding down, what you want to say on the way out?
I don't know. We are recording at the same time on Twitch, so I got to be careful what I say. Big shout out to AB, Mr. Aaron, who did what he did, and it's not cool to do what he did because people love you and they care about you, and the world's better with you in it. But also, don't let his sacrifice be in vain. Do what's appropriate for you. Cast non-committed. Go to a protest. Get arrested. Get arrested like the lady from Euphoria just got arrested yesterday. She
oh, really?
Flew. Yeah, I can't think. I don't watch that stuff. But yeah, she apparently flew back from Milan Fashion Week to protest Joe Biden in New York City and at Seth Meyers' show and got arrested. Yes, that's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody do what they can do and don't let his sacrifice die in vain. And don't let anybody tell you that he was crazy, because in a crazy world, this is a crazy, sick world that we live in.
On that point, literally, the man like did self-immolation to Palestine, like to protest the Biden position on Palestine, essentially against the genocide. And the wild thing about that I saw it from it that made me think that I was losing my mind was that Democrats and like liberals who like talk about like self-care or whatever tried to make him seem like he was they would try and make him seem like he was an unwell person or something like that.
Yep.
And two, they would also do this like, oh, not a good look sort of deal. And I was just like, are you kidding me?
The man had standby orders from his command to be ready to deploy to Israel at a moment's notice. Like,
yeah.
Who's the crazy people?
I don't know, health crisis. I don't know what will.
Yeah. He's not. He wasn't crazy, my dude.
Yeah. Anyway, rest in power.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thank you for listening, everybody, to Good Morning Comrade. We'll see you next week. We love you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.